This is episode 134 of the A-News podcast, which covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchist news. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, see you at your favorite non-sectarian anarchist site, anarchistnews.org.
What's new this week? Update on Konstantinos Gatsoglou. This update reminds us of Gatsoglou's charges. There are many, most seriously, I guess, related to letter bombs to a number of corporate bigwigs, how long he's been in prison already, since 2017, and then gives info on his trial, which just started and already demonstrates the mind-numbing tedium of the bureaucracies that rule our lives. Quote, at the first hearing, the defendants and their representative defense lawyers appeared before the court, while for those who did not do so, the court requested lawyers and appointed them ex officio. The witnesses were all present. The aforementioned advocates requested a deadline to obtain the case file and contact the accused. The court postponed and set the next hearing for 8:10, with subsequent hearings on October 11th, 15th, 21st, and 31st. The second case of the Revolutionary Struggle trial by the same court was postponed to November 29th, provided that Dinos's case was over, unquote. He had friends in the courtroom, which is always good, and the list of recipients of explosives is pretty impressive.
Letters, Ted Kaczynski and Derek Jensen from the Wild Will Project. This exchange between two people who used to be relevant and no longer are is interesting for a few reasons, although it's overly long. One, there are still people who haven't read either Jensen or Kaczynski, and this serves as a fairly accessible intro to both of them. Two, it's a study in conversation through snail mail, and it's not too alien in tone with what I would expect of a prison correspondence between strangers. It's pretty empty until Jensen loses his temper at the end and says things like, to be frank, most people have been delighted and honored to be interviewed by me. So, two guys trying to get something from each other and then flailing when they don't get what they want. Instructive if you're into that sort of thing.
A series of anarchist actions against military draft and the law against deferrals from Revolutionary Action. This is a short note about protests against a new military draft law in Grodno, Minsk, and Brest. The author feels the need to remind us that people die in the military. So, yeah. Far more interesting, though underrepped, is a comment recommending that people get into the military for as short a stint as possible to learn valuable skills. This is not the first time that I've heard that kind of idea, but while it has a veneer of practicality to it, it is a very, very, very thin veneer. More the illusion of a veneer, really.
Trial with the accused in Fenix 2 from Anarchist Black Cross, Czechoslovakia. An extremely short announcement of a court date in the Fenix 2 trial. Some will remember that there have been two parts to this trial that started in 2015, charging people with being in the Network of Revolutionary Cells, a group that was claiming responsibility for arson attacks and sabotage. The first part of the trial resulted in a high court in Prague dropping all the charges. Part two involves five defendants and a lot of police harassment. Quote, on April 8th, 10th, and 12th, 2019, the trial with four anarchists and one environmentalist accused in Operation Fenix 2 will be taking place at the District Court of Most every day at 8:30 a.m. Come to support them at the courthouse or by any solidarity action. Let them know you are not apathetic to their future as you are not towards the freedom of all of us. Any way of expressing support is welcomed. Unquote.
Call to action from some informal anarchists in permanent conflict from anarchists worldwide. A call to arms and also to reflection by anarchists in Mexico. Considering the changing stories from those in power who will use any story, any person, any legend to manipulate their audiences. Quote, in the same way, every morning it is a question of changing history. Thus, the figure of Ricardo Flores Magón is usurped and presented as the ideologue of the fourth transformation, while in parallel the legacy of Benito Juarez and Francisco Madero is claimed. If we did not know the trick of the old Priismo now recycled in Morena, we would think that it was ignorance or that AMLO suffered from organic schizophrenia. But no, all this ideological muddle is intentional, or rather, very malicious. For those of us who know the history of anarchism in the Mexican region, it is clear that during the long period of the Juarez government, it was when the most anarchists were killed by firing squad in the history of Mexico. And during the government of Francisco Madero, history is no different, deporting, imprisoning, and murdering anarchists who always refused to recognize his government. Ricardo Flores Magón himself planned with anarchist comrades the execution of Madero, unquote. I found this piece inspiring personally.
How to find and take action against border infrastructure in Canada. This is a piece that lists some likely Canadian targets and encourages Canadians to step up their border game to the level of the anti-ICE actions in the U.S. It includes links to other pages for more tips and practical suggestions for quote-unquote nocturnal direct action. Sex! Have fun, people.
Three action groups of antagonistic cells with a new urban guerrilla disband from anarchists worldwide. Quote, with this communique, the three signatory action groups put an end to the contributions we made under the NANGU Informal Coordination Project from April 2015 to September 2019. This will be our last communique under these acronyms. We detach ourselves from this project with the clarity to continue being actively present in the street struggle and in the new urban guerrilla, reviving the rudimentary autonomous action as we have done until now. Nothing is over. Everything continues. Long live anarchy! Antagonistic cells of the new urban guerrilla, Karkai cell, forces for the overthrow of civilization, insurrectionary column, anger and conspiracy, FAI, FRI, unquote.
Anarcho-bloc at the rally, let go, from A. Infos. 20,000 people protested in Moscow for the freedom of political prisoners. Anarchists handed out a leaflet that promoted direct democracy.
Update on the anarchist intervention at Athens Municipal Radio, from anarchists worldwide. Quote, on Tuesday, 1st of October, a counter-information intervention took place at the Municipal Radio Athens 9.84. The intervention was organized by the Open Assembly of Squats, Collectives, Immigrants, Internationalists, and Solidarians with the participation of 30 comrades. The comrades entered the studio after coming into agreement with the employees, and the intervention lasted half an hour. While on air, the intervention made a speech about the squats, immigrants, and the general oppressive and impoverished conditions that prevail. Next, a recorded message, which ridicules the regime of terror they are imposing, was broadcast. To set the record straight, we have to inform you that during the intervention, there was no conflict with the employees of the radio station. Whoever listened to the intervention on air understood the mood, and we expect from the employees to weigh in against the fabrications of the Greek police and the mayor of Athens. As expected, the intervention was removed from the archive that gets uploaded on the radio's website in an attempt to conceal the political content of the intervention and its characteristics. Unquote. Sounds like a great action, though later 8 people were arrested. Blah. The statement that went out on air is included in this post.
Audio and video. Pepe on preparing for freedom, 1 hour and 19 minutes from the final straw. Episode starts off with Sean Swain's call for support concerning his pardon request to Ohio Governor Mark DeWine's chief counsel Matthew Donahue, which you can do by giving a polite call to 614-644-0825, or sending a pleasant email to matthew.donahue@governor.ohio.gov and letting them know that you are definitely, totally a registered Ohio voter who supports the pardon and release of Sean Swain, A243-205, Buckingham Correctional Facility. Rest of the episode is an interview with Connecticut anarchist and music promoter Pepe. At the time of the interview, Pepe had pled guilty to federal drug charges and was facing a possible 10-year minimum sentence. The interview covers mass incarceration, the criminal justice system in general, and the specific ways that the lead-up to Pepe's sentencing fucked with his life. On this last point, the waiting was so burdensome that Pepe and his family had come to see his actual sentencing date as a relief from all the not knowing. Pepe was finally sentenced to 5 years in prison and will be releasing his own podcast, Preparing for Freedom, at preparingforfreedom.org.
Anarchy Bang, introducing episode 39, Anarchist Colonization of Mars, 2 hours. Taking inspiration from science fiction and science fact, one of the Anarchy Bang hosts suggests a radical departure. Quote, did you get that? A radical departure. Quote, taking inspiration from all of this, the question here becomes, how about we build some real-life anarchist colonies on Mars? Our current planet is fucked. Shh, don't tell her. In all different kinds of different ways. So how about those of us who yearn for a completely different world go set up shop on a completely different world? How about we turn the red planet into the red and black planet? Let's become Martians, unquote. Okay, sorry about the editorial comments there. Most of the thread on this post seems to be quite in sync with the spirit of this topic, especially the diehard anarchist astronaut premise.
The Illumination of Fulvia Ferrari, 43 minutes from the Transmetropolitan Review. This is going to be an unfair write-up as I'm coming blindly into the fourth installment of a series, but here we go. The video portion, a combination of newsreels, photographs, video clips, and narrative subtitles, attempts an interesting form of storytelling, sort of showing the chance meetings of Fulvia and notable figures from the 50s through the 70s, and then explaining those figures' relevance to the era. I say sort of because the clips and subtitles they use don't really do a great job of illustrating the connection between Fulvia and the other person. For example, it remains fairly unclear why such a large portion of the video involves the Red Army faction. Some of these connections are definitely explained in the accompanying text, but many remain unclear. Anyway, after watching this installment, I definitely want to check out the other three, and you should too!
Topic of the week, abandoning history. Having abandoned history, we have no interest in waiting for the end of the world. We have realized we cannot live our lives except by being the world's undoing. In the end, there is nothing to wait for and nothing to fear. What's more, we have all the time in the world to undo it. We who would like to not be deluded, who hold a certain disillusion as a criterion of life, know that everything comes to an end. At least we know it sometimes. Sometimes it is as simple as knowing our friend will die, or that we will die for them. You know about death because you are surrounded by it. But even as everything manages and orders the death that surrounds, it conceals death. It has to do so constantly and cannot ever do so entirely. And when it fails, you see that you are surrounded by death. When we spoke of hopelessness, we meant a disregard for everything, but also an attitude towards the certainty of death. When we spoke of fearlessness, it was to distinguish ourselves from everything that lives as though it should not die. So, without fear, without hope, we are playing a game with death and time. Our project, to which we will have been true, will come to an end as well. The game, which comes in several variants, is to know this and remain committed without illusions. Commitment to commitment is to know how to communicate the disillusion and the game. This is what we are doing when we say hello.
Yeah, it's funny to rehear this. You know, I was part of the group of people that put this piece of writing together, and we wrote it in this interesting way where basically we wrote it in layers, where like sort of I did a version and then passed it on to the next person who then rewrote it in their language. And so while there's clear some pieces, some parts of this piece that have my tone to it, like other parts, it's very clear have the tone of another person whose writing I know fairly well. And so in rehearing this, I don't hear myself in it very much. But the desire I had, which was to talk about sort of several complicated things at once, it's done really well. In my opinion, of course. You know, because ultimately, like, we who would like to not be deluded, who hold to a certain disillusion, that speaks to the fact that while we are both cynical about the world as it stands, we in fact do have goals and desires and maybe even positive energy, you know, in a direction. And that oftentimes that negative vibe seems to be the dominant influence, but the dominant influence instead is this way in which people are so, I guess, spooked, for lack of better language. You know, I still see so many people around me, like, let's say in the context of the climate change conversation, you know, on the one hand, of course, we know that climate change is real and that it is going to be a dominant feature of our life. On the other hand, most of the things that are important about climate change from a symptom perspective, we're not going to experience during our life. And so it means that people are both talking in these doom and gloom articulations and will basically bore of that because they're not going to actually see the oceans rise and the lava, you know, coming out of the mountain next door and all the rest. And this piece, you know, I feel like it's really short and it says a lot of the things that I still very much feel about keeping, I guess, your perspective clear and straight.
Yeah, I don't remember when I got a copy of Hello from a Little Black Cart order years ago, but I, reading this again now, I see a lot of what I've gone through in it. I think it's really, because it is a very like thick excerpt, and I guess one of those things is the difficulty of commitment to commitment, because I feel like a lot of people do take this lesson more or less that things they like don't live forever, but they react to it badly, which is definitely what I did when my first baby anarchist project started falling apart. And it makes it hard to, I mean, whatever, there's a lot of work you have to do in reorienting yourself to the world, and that, you know, whatever, is a whole different life project.
Yeah, I mean ultimately the concept of the commitment to commitment is this idea that you know, whatever it is that I'm doing right now, absolutely, you know, could be destroyed or totally transformed or something. It could fail. It will fail. And how are we ready for that? Like, you know, obviously as I've grown older, my projects sort of like have in my own imagination more and more of an epic scale. But I do think about what, you know, like right now I'm talking about dropping one of the podcasts that I'm working on. And mostly it's just because it's taking so much work personally, and the things I need in terms of help basically don't exist right now. In other words, I'm not like the Bay Area, at least for post-left anarchists, doesn't have like a big friendly milieu of people who are just waiting to work on projects together and all the rest. Like right now there's been this intense retraction or dissipation of people, and not an accompanying something else to fill it. Like, you know, I feel like I refer to all the time in the various different ways in which I have to communicate that anarchism has really changed as a phenomena, and I don't actually call it a big city phenomena anymore, meaning that the good things that are happening are not in the big cities. They're somewhere else. And so that commitment to commitment is this question of like, to the extent to which there is a spirit to projects that I'm interested in working on and people I'm interested in working with, I'm still very much committed to those people. But being aware of what's changed and how to roll with that, that's a big open question right now.
Sure. Yeah, that's something that's been on my mind too, in terms of like the distro that I am one of now two people, and it started out as a big project, and it's, you know, part of my reorientation in my life towards commitments was let me say that differently. I mean, because we're talking, this piece, Hello, talks a lot about hope. And I think that has a lot to do with the assumptions that you have about how something will go. And, you know, hope usually involves a positive assumption about where things will go, or at least where they could go, and you're betting on that. And I think taking a more modest or conservative approach to these things saying, well, this is worth doing, even though it's not necessarily going to turn out, or I know it's not going to turn out the way that I want exactly. It feels healthier, but also it's complicated by the fact that starting something and then seeing it end, losing people in your life, or at least becoming distanced from those people who you said hello to and you realized in fact they weren't committed to commitment, is still, I mean, it's still tough.
Yeah, it is. I mean, especially, you know, when you, as I continue to try to talk about it in sort of like a larger context, like with the Bay Area, how it's changed, who's left, who's still here. And, you know, in this context, like this commitment to commitment type of question also speaks to the fact that, like, there are other towns that have also more or less fallen off the map over the past 3 to 5 years. And you know, like, is that a useful way to think about how we are together, how we're strategizing the things that we do, you know, and especially in the context of the fact that most of the people who I'm the closest with are involved on some level with publishing projects, and that doesn't feel excellent to me. You know, like, I wish what we were doing were more, had more to do with our real daily life. Now, obviously, my desire has always been to drag people into the world of print and the world of text as, like, the way to sort of do this. Because, you know, by and large, when I think about history of the radical movement over the past 50 years, you know, one of the things that used to be in the 70s and 80s, a much bigger focus for radicals was to do stuff around food politics. Mm-hmm. This had to do with the sort of the rise of vegetarianism and how radicals, you know, were very central to that rise. But it also had to do with the idea of, like, decentering food distribution being something, you know, like, i.e. food co-ops and the like. Like, that was something that was very doable for people who more or less had an opposition to capitalism, but were willing on some level to compromise under the excuse of, like, doing something. And the Bay Area has a particularly interesting story here. There was a food co-op here in the early 70s that actually ended in gunfire.
Really?
Yeah. But you know, if you combine that story with a Black Panther story, you know, with other stories, you know, you get that, like, food distribution could actually be a conflictual thing it is that we do. But in fact, now we do Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, as you know, like in other words, that entire logic has been destroyed. Of course, you know, we know that it was always still capitalism, food co-ops, but it was also something else, and it could have been in something else. And this sort of speaks, this comes back around to sort of the openness, but also the vagueness of the commitment to commitment question, because, you know, the point isn't that I think that doing text is the right way to do radical stuff. It's just that it ends up being the thing that I am the most compelled by and interested in personally. It's the kind of work I like doing personally, but, you know, I don't think that it's the answer to this particular very hard question. I mean, it almost feels like if we were going to reevaluate, we would head more in the direction of land and housing. But nowadays, you know, most of our friends don't have the money to even contribute to that conversation. Anyways. You know, it's obviously a bummer to focus in on sort of the hopelessness of most of our current situations. And it's funny to say that this, our essay is mostly about hope, but I think it's sort of mostly about how difficult, fundamentally difficult it is to have hope when everything, you know, which is obviously the open-ended word that we use to mean bad, when everything feels like so toxic, so complicated, so sophisticated, and so.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I feel that. And I feel, I was talking with my partner about the difficulty of friendship, which also comes up in this essay. And, you know, it's, I guess, part of the difficulty of commitment to commitment. And I think this is where something like land projects and things like that connect, is that we, and I would also connect this to a lot of the experiences that I've had in my own life with people, is that a lot of projects that I've been involved with don't have something that looks like a commitment to each other as people that is anything more than sort of distanced or tentative. And, you know, and to some extent, it's always going to be that way. And I think that part of the value of hopelessness, as it's framed in this essay, is that you don't take people for granted. You don't assume that, like, someone is always going to be anything to you. It makes you take a much more raw and engaged look at your relationships with people. But also the back end of that, or the context for those commitments, is that you're living in a world that makes being any sort of meaningful thing to another person really fucking difficult, and is always undermining that, especially when you're trying to do something so radically different in intent than what it is.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, of course, I had become disillusioned by friendship a little while before writing, being part of the writing of this, which, but I do have to say that, like, I still am very, I guess I still love watching people have hope in friendship, even though even though it seems so ridiculously naive and stupid, because of course, you know, I guess it's a different language to use to talk about, like, some fundamental problems with the world that we live in now. I am experiencing more and more people just having terrible, painful alienation, that's their daily life. Like, and most people who seem to want to speak about or engage in quote unquote friendship, they at least sort of, like, have escaped that, like, that sensibility of someone who lives their life on Facebook. You know, those people, I mean, my heart goes out to them because everything seems so terrible for them. But the flip side to that is, you know, I would say even right now that the most radical thing I'm doing in a daily life perspective is the fact that I live in a group house with about 10 people. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that feels crappy because half the time I engage with my roommates, it feels vapid and superficial and not what I want it to be.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, that's a really good point. And also that, I mean, I feel like the struggle against alienation is just going to get harder as, things go forward. And I mean, it's funny because, we were in Toronto for the Toronto Anarchist Book Fair recently. And, we were talking with someone from Philly, and I feel like every time I talk with someone from Philly, they always have a lot to say about the ridiculous drama that's going on in Philly. And in a way, it sounds like a real pain in the ass, and I wouldn't want to be in a city like that because there's a lot of whatever antsiness and nitpicking and so forth. But on another hand, it's like, God, you are so fortunate to have something that you consider a social context in which you even have people to fight with about this stuff.
For sure. Well, obviously we could have this conversation for much longer. We've already gone a little longer than we usually normally do for Topic of the Week. Thank you for joining me.
No, thank you.
Have a great day.
You as well.
That's gone too. You're a regular Rip Van Winkle, aren't you? What have you been doing the past week?
It's hard to explain.
I can't believe it.
And in my dreams, I...
podcast is the effort of many people. This week it was sound edited by Greg. What's New was written by Jackie and Greg, and read by Chisel and Greg. I don't know if there's going to be an editorial this week or not, so not sure what you want to do about that. I'll say editorial by Chisel, and then you can just take it out if there's not one.
Or I'll just leave this whole part in.
No! We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week, abandoning history. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com for news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary. See you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room link on the news. And